You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Rob.
Wait, what? What do you mean there's lore in this game? I didn't approve any of this.
And Daryl.
Is Maya behind me? She's totally behind me, isn't she?
Greetings and welcome to episode 161 of The Training Dummies. Recorded on March 27th, 2017. My Daryl. Wow. That didn't come out right. My name is Daryl. And I'm excited for this episode. I can't even talk correctly. Rob, how are you doing this evening?
I believe you have officially joined me as part of the rating 1%, right? Where it is an embarrassment of riches, where you have so many legendaries, you just can't decide which one you want to wear now.
I suppose you're right. I got a fourth last night, and the one I got last night from Blingtron is apparently the best one for destruction. So yes, I'm excited. And now even planning on which legendaries to use on which fights. So
it's welcome to the 1%.
Yes, it's a new and interesting concept. But I guess we should get into why I'm so excited for this episode. I'm not sure how many times this guest has been on, but it's always a lot of fun and I always look forward to it. So let's give another big Training Dummies welcome to Anne Stickney.
Hi.
Yay. Seriously, I'm like, I've been looking forward to this ever since we kind of nailed down the date again. So thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, you're lucky. I finally managed to like wiggle a hole in my schedule. And that thing is rock solid.
Well, I think Happy 7.2 as well. I was telling Daryl earlier, I don't think that like the timing really could have worked out any differently, because any later than this, you'd probably be booked up again.
No, I'm good for a while, I think. I'm actually like, I've got a little wiggle room in my schedule for like extra stuff.
But what we want to do then is, because I know you are on a tight work schedule and whatnot too, we want to just kind of get into the juicy stuff.
Okay. 7.2 is tomorrow. I'm excited.
I know. Happy 7.2 Eve. I felt like I should have wrote like one of those, it was the night before 7.2 and all through the Azeroth or whatever.
But, there you go.
So before we get into it though, Anne, what is your favorite thing about Legion so far?
Oh no. I have so many things. Do you know, Legion, the last time we talked, we were like still in Warlords of Draenor, and I was still massively unhappy about that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in Legion, and it's like, in comparison, everything in Legion is my favorite because it's all so much better. But I think what really stands out to me and what has stood out pretty much since day one of the expansion, Suramar. Absolutely, Suramar. The entirety of Suramar. The city itself is just this feat of design. It feels like a living city, and we've never really had that before. Stormwind, I think, was probably the closest that we had come to that, because mm-hmm. Stormwind was full of those little NPCs that run around, talk to each other, and that kind of thing. Like, you got the one little boy who's constantly chasing the girl around and taking her dolly or whatever, and now I think she's having her revenge this expansion, I'm not sure. But Suramar is full of that, top to bottom, and the thing is just this massive, expansive metropolis, and it's beautiful. And the storyline with all of it, with the Nightfallen and the Nightborn mm-hmm. and the back and forth with that, is just, I ate all of that up. I loved it. I loved it so much. I was sad when it was over. I was kind of sort of low-key hoping when they came out with that 7.2 patch trailer mm-hmm. that Kil'jaeden would just like torch Dalaran and we'd be forced to move our base to Suramar, because that would make me happy. No. Right? I mean, the Nighthold is like right across a bridge from the Broken Shore. So technically speaking, it'd be an okay vantage point, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. It would be wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, we've already got shops set up there. So
we could live in amazing elf city all the time. It'd be great. This is also, you know, complicated by the fact that I play a rogue. So the whole city is very, it feels very Assassin's Creed. And that's kind of right up my alley.
Nice.
I just love it. I love all of it. I love all of it. But the other thing that I love about Legion is just the fact that there are things to do. There are so many things to do when you reach level one tech. Like there's a million things to do, and not all of it is just raiding. And I know you guys were talking about being the raiding 1% or whatever. I'm no longer the raiding 1%.
That's not, we're not either. We're very, very casual.
I have two legendaries though.
So oh, see, you're good. Almost there. One and more, you're gonna be at that threshold.
I finally got one on my alt, so I'm happy about that. On the nice. Leveling stream alt, I got one for her. And I've been waiting for that to happen, but, I retired from raiding in Warlords, and it was probably the worst expansion to retire from raiding. Because that was the only thing that there was to do once you hit level 100. And I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. So mostly I twiddled my thumbs and stockpiled so much gold before Legion came out. I think I'm at like a 500,000 now or something like that. Anyway, well, the thing is once
trade
you
that
have...
in on Overwatch loot boxes and Hearthstone cards. And
no, I'm stockpiling it right now because I know there's going to be something delicious that I'm going to want to get off the auction house at some point.
Right.
And I'm just waiting until I find out what that is. Probably mounts because I like to collect those. But the thing about retiring from raiding is that all of a sudden I had all this free time in Warlords and I filled it with all of this wonderful stuff. And then Legion came along and I'm like, well, I could raid again, but then I'd have to give up all this wonderful stuff that I filled the free time slots with. And I kind of like all that stuff.
Yeah. Huh?
So I decided, you know what? I think I'll just stick to LFR and the occasional, hey, a friend of mine is running such and such a raid. They have a slot open and, you know, I'll go jump in on that. But other than that, there's more than enough to keep me occupied, even without raiding. And that's what I'm really happy about is it doesn't matter when I log on. There's constantly something to do. Always. And,
always.
And it feels like everything that you do has a purpose and a point, which is even better.
Right.
That was a really long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
We expect nothing less. We expect nothing less. Let's take the flip side of that then. What is the most frustrating thing about Legion and how would you fix it?
Professions. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with professions. The thing is I think that Warlords of Draenor, by tying all of the professions into the garrison and making them kind of contingent upon the functionality of your garrison, they broke professions in a critical kind of way where they just didn't work right anymore. It never felt right. It never felt right in Warlords, particularly with something like engineering or even jewel crafting. Engineering in particular, right? I didn't really put together the widgets that I made. I had to like give rocks and plants to a dude who then made widgets that I could use to make the other stuff. And it didn't make any kind of logical sense. Same thing with, you know, the whole jewel crafting thing. You mined ore and then you gave the ore to somebody else and they would turn around and make crystals out of it. And I'm like, I'm the jewel crafter. Why am I not doing any of this stuff? Like, why have we just turned this into the whole, like, monkey factory? It's like a game of mousetrap or something where, you know, you drop the ball at the top of the thing and you hope that the cage comes down and catches something of value at the end. And the thing is by the time you got done with all of that rigmarole and actually made something for your character, 9 times out of 10, it wasn't even worthwhile because you'd already been in LFR or you'd already been in a heroic dungeon. So you had better gear. Unless you wanted to make the upgrade items, which was another. It was like, okay, well, we're going to, you know, run the pony around the circle another time and just keep you guys busy with busy work. Legion feels like
the pendulum has swung like the opposite direction now.
It feels like somebody was desperately trying to make up for how irrevocably broken professions felt in Warlords. And instead of fixing the issue, they kind of broke it even further because we've got this whole obliterum thing. Profession, like, in order to get further along in your professions, you have to do dungeons, which feels weird. I do like the idea. Right. But I like the idea of having, like, quests for professions. I think that's great. But again, we're running into the same... It's the same issue. It's the same issue that we ran into with Warlords. It doesn't matter what you make out of your profession. None of it is really relevant. The only stuff that's actually interesting is like the toys that you can make. Or, you know, if you can craft a class mount or something like that. Or sometimes there's a widget like engineering, there's a couple of things that are kind of decent on the decent end of the spectrum. But even then, in order to make them comparable with anything that you'd find, in, even in LFR, you have to do the whole Obliterum nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not even talk about unlocking that. I believe they took away the unlock mechanic in 7.2, so that's great because I never did that quest because as soon as it said, hey, I need you to bring me these things that are made by these professions that you don't even have, I go to the auction house to look up these items thinking, okay, this won't be so bad. And it's like 8,000 gold an item. I'm are you kidding me? This is the only thing.
Every set of bracers out there, all of a sudden, is the most important gear ever.
Right. And the funny part, the really funny part, is that became the only relevant piece of gear that any of these profession people could make any kind of gold on, because the rest of it was all crap.
That's exactly it.
Well, that wasn't even good gear. You just needed it for the stupid
because there was a demand for it, because people needed it for this quest, they could go ahead and jack up the price on it and people would pay that kind of price. I was not one of those people. Me and my 500,000 gold said, no, thank you. And I said, Obliterum, oh, well, I guess I don't need professions that badly. And I didn't. I never have. I've gotten better stuff from world quests. I've gotten better stuff from world bosses. I've gotten better stuff from LFR. I've gotten better stuff from, like, even, you know, class hall missions. Mm-hmm. I've gotten better stuff out of that. So why bother? How
Warforged and Titanforged stuff basically put any of that under the table, like, right away, so...
And even then, that feels a little bit ridiculous on the side, too, because it's like, oh, get a piece of gear, but if you're lucky, it'll be even better gear, if you're lucky. And you know how much people really love luck in this game.
Oh, my goodness.
On things like drop rates and stuff like that. Yeah, favorite. People love it. So the question then becomes, how do you fix professions? And I don't know. I don't have a magic wand that I can wave. I'm not a designer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All I can say is, here's what we're looking at here, right? What did Warlords do? Warlords stripped all of the fun of making stuff out. What did Legion do? Legion put that back in there with the quests and things like that and actually made it kind of engaging again, but it added on top of it this whole overcomplication of having to do these dungeons and having to do all this other stuff and jump through a million hoops. But the real problem, and it's been a problem in both Warlords and in Legion, is that the things that you craft have no real value.
Yeah.
People don't want to buy them. And if people don't want to buy them on the auction house, then why do you want to make them? So here's what I think that they should do. And, you know, this is going to be kind of controversial. Ditch the idea of making armor that you can use in combat. Just ditch it. Because, you know what? Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have better stuff like within the first 2 weeks of any expansion than anything that you can craft. Unless you want to jump through a million hoops. Nobody wants to jump through a million hoops. You know what people want? They want pretty things.
It's like transmog stuff.
Let us make transmog stuff. Let us make toys. Let us make more mounts. Let us make more stuff that has absolutely no impact on gameplay, you know, for classes that can craft things like tailoring and stuff like that. Maybe throw in a few items that are kind of like the buff kind of items where, you know, they're enchants or, you know, what I miss is, do you remember back in Wrath of the Lich King when we had like leatherworking could make like armor patches that you put on and that kind of thing? Okay. Great. Bring those back. Bring those back. Give every profession a couple of those.
There's some glove enchants that let you do herbalism like way faster.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a Tauren Druid to be an herbalist anymore. It's wonderful.
But, you know, throw a few of those things in there where it's like, okay, you can make a patch that you can put on leather gear if you're a leather worker or whatever, and that'll help your performance. Don't give us gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some utility stuff out there. There's some sort of thing that leatherworking makes that lets you avoid being dismounted if you get attacked while you're running around.
The saddle and tack stuff. And then there's also like the toy that you can make, the love seat that you can make is absolutely hysterical and I love it to pieces. Mounts that you can make through various professions. I love the flying carpets that you could make with tailoring.
Oh, yeah.
And these kinds of things have value to people, not because they need it for their raid or anything like that, but just because it's fun. And maybe that's what professions need to be, is just, this needs to be stuff that's fun. It needs to be stuff that isn't overly complicated and, you know, mired in all of this stuff with the dungeon running and that kind of thing. And, you know, maybe that's kind of a controversial opinion, but at the same time, what exactly are all these items worth right now? Look at what they did to Inscription. They gutted the glyph system and left mm-hmm. them with junk. Yep. So why not just gut everything? I don't know. That's just me.
Oh, it's a good idea. Good. I like it.
I like it too.
I like, because I mean, right now I take a piece of crafted gear if I'm on a fresh tune that I'm trying to hurry up and get to the latest LFR and I need to meet that gear level quota, you know.
Is there still an eye level requirement on these things?
Oh,
I never know.
Yeah.
I just go do them.
if you're caught up, if you're doing world quests, if you're doing that stuff, you have no problem. Otherwise, a brand new tune still has a little bit of a barrier. So.
And I know that doesn't really have any, you know, application towards lore, which is what I usually talk about, and that's kind of my focus and everything, but in playing Legion, these are the kinds of things that I've noticed. Like, I've been really happy with the story so far. I have no complaints about that. Well, okay, I have a couple of complaints about that, but nothing major, right?
Well, speaking of, did you have any other opening questions, Zero?
No, I think we should get into this.
This is Archim Tyros, the professional warrior, and you're listening to The Training Dummies with Rob and Daryl.
You guys have any questions or comments or want to find out what we're doing? We're active on Twitter. The show is at Training Dummies. I am at Rob Copen. Daryl's at Daryl_TTD. And if you haven't figured it out, we are talking about lore and all the things. And I was hoping for some spoilers, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But, Anne, you did say a couple things about the story bothered you. I don't know if we want to open with that or not.
Sure, why not?
Okay, let's do it. All right,
Where's Jaina? Do
you think in the dev interview this last week where they kind of like blew that off and said, "Oh, we love Jaina, just not right now." Do you think that was like fake? Is she gonna show up? Is she, you know, oh, Dreadlord? She is the Avatar of Sargeras. There it is.
I don't think they've been paying any attention to her, and I think that they've just kind of shoveled her off to the side because they didn't know what to do with her.
Mm-hmm. Which is stupid because she was, you know, she wasn't a major player, but she's been heavily involved with, you know, if you in war crimes and everything leading into Warlords, and then at the beginning of Legion, she was, you know, very heavily involved, and then was just like, you know what, screw this, I'm out, and like that's it, you know.
Here's the deal: they had one character in Jaina Proudmoore. They had the Eternal Optimist, the diplomat, the girl who really just wanted everyone to get along. And she was the only one of the very few people on Azeroth who wanted that to happen. Thrall was one of those other people. Anduin is kind of one of those people, or was kind of one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided, well, Thrall was stepping down. There was no way Garrosh was ever going to work with Jaina. So it feels like they decided to go ahead and take that character and push her to her breaking point and see what happened, right? So they decided, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to do some heavy character development with Jaina. We're going to blow up Theramore. We're going to have Garrosh Hellscream do it with the rest of the Horde at his back, and we're going to see what happens to Jaina at that point. And Jaina, understandably, was not happy about any of that,
mm-hmm.
And turned into this character who was almost the polar opposite of that character that she had been. She was angry. She was really angry, and she didn't believe in working with the Horde because she'd tried her entire life to work with them, and where did that get her? What happened there, you know?
To be fair, I've been Horde since I really seriously started playing the game, you know, for years now, and I didn't like what Garrosh did either, so.
Right. But the point of the matter is that you have a woman who had very little in her life because she lost Kul Tiras. She left Kul Tiras. She lost Dalaran. because Archimonde and got sent away to the Eastern, or excuse me, to Kalimdor. In Kalimdor, she established this little city, this foothold of her own. Her father showed up, tried to take it away from her. She lost her father on the basis of everything that she believed in, mm-hmm. everything that she really fervently believed in. So she lost pretty much everything. And yet, in spite of all of that, she still managed to persevere, and she managed to hold on, and she managed to build this little stronghold, and she managed to try and repeatedly forge these diplomatic ties that didn't really want to be forged, I guess. And Thrall, the other person who was like her cohort in crime, as it were, the other person who felt like diplomacy was an option, he stepped down. He walked away. She stayed put. He walked away. And when he walked away, he left a warlord in charge. He put Garrosh in charge and said, okay, you run the thing like the old horde. And Garrosh said, okay, we'll run it like the old horde. We're going to go blow up Theramore. And logically speaking, Garrosh was doing what Garrosh should have been doing, you know, with those instructions and with what he remembered of the original horde. Yeah, absolutely. That's a logical course of action. But for Jaina, it's like a betrayal. It's like a big betrayal because mm-hmm. you've got, you know, this orc who you had like this long established friendship relationship with, who basically, you know, said bye, see ya, walked off and left a tiger to go, you know, tear you to shreds while he was off gallivanting wherever he was gallivanting. And it kind of tore everything apart, and it tore her apart. It was an interesting direction for them to go, because Jaina immediately got propelled from this woman who a lot of people made fun of in Wrath of the Lich King because she spent a lot of time crying, even though that was, again, a perfectly understandable reaction to seeing the expansion's big bad guy, and the expansion's big bad guy is wearing the face of her dead lover. Yeah, you're going to be upset about that, right? That's something you're going to be continuing. Every time you look at the Lich King, all you can see is that man that you almost married, you know? That's going to tear anybody apart. So Jaina's had a rough time. She's had a really rough time. And I was kind of fascinated with the direction that they took her. I was fascinated with how she turned into this kind of hardened individual, a la Liliana in Dragon Age. If you do the right stuff, you know, she'll turn mean too if you do the right stuff. But so with Jaina, she turned into this character who was like really dead set focused on tearing apart the horde, and everybody else kind of looked at her and went, "Wow, you're kind of going overboard, Jaina." And you know, we get to the end of Mist of Pandaria, and that whole scene after the Siege of Orgrimmar had me kind of taken aback a little bit, because first off, Jaina flat out sounded downright evil there, and I it was probably just the voice actress and the lines they chose mm-hmm. and the way she read that particular line, but it sounded like she was downright, she was just like, die, die, die. Like, you know, she just turned Reaper or something.
Yeah. Yep, very much. Yep.
That was half of the issue, right? Because for me, I'm like, did we just kill that spark of everything that Jaina was so thoroughly that there's nothing left of her? Is that where we're going with this? Because I don't want Jaina to die. I don't want her to turn into a bad guy that we have to suddenly snuff out or something. I like Jaina.
So you don't like the whole joke of the, or whatever, meme of the Dreadlord thing.
Yeah. Everybody's like, oh, ha ha, Jaina's a Dreadlord. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't care. the thing is with Jaina, and the thing that upsets me with Jaina, is that half of it was that whole line and the line being read. And I can understand that, you know, sometimes directors choose the wrong reading to put in, or sometimes a line is said with a particular emphasis and it comes off in a way that's not intended. Okay, that I can understand. It wasn't just that, though. It was the fact that she said that, and everybody else immediately said, oh, no, Jaina, we don't want to do that. No, we have to take him to trial. We have to give them a chance. We have to be fair here. And I'm like, where were you people when Jaina, like, for the last, what, 15 years or so that Jaina's mm-hmm. been trying to work on diplomacy? Like, where mm-hmm. were you people? She's on your side now. She's standing where you were a year ago. And you've decided to go the other direction? Like, how is that fair? None of that is fair. The way mm-hmm. that she's been treated has not been fair. So when she huffed off to Dalaran, you know, and we had all that conflict going on in Missa Pandaria, when she kicked the Sun Reavers out of Dalaran, understandable reaction, you know? And her reaction in War Crimes was also kind of a legit reaction. Although at the end of the book, it felt like she'd finally resolved everything and maybe she was getting that glimmer of optimism back again. And then we play Warlords, and when we play Warlords, we find out, no, that's not the case. No, she still hates the Horde.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into Legion, and Khadgar's like, we all need to work together to fight the Burning Legion. And Jaina's like, I'm not working with those people, and if you want them to join the Kirin Tor, I'm out. And then she leaves.
I mean, was it the... I guess I get it. Like you said, she's been through a ton of stuff. Like, you can't expect her just to be like, you know, love will find a way, Jaina, for the, you know, for the rest of eternity. I mean, they really just pushed her over the edge.
The problem isn't that they pushed her over the edge, because I actually found that kind of fascinating that they took her to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that they took her to that level, because it's very rare that they will take a character and give a character that kind of time. The problem that I have is that they took her to that level and then they just left her there. It's like they said, oh, let's see how far we can push her. Oh, we can push her about that far. Okay. Well, let's forget about her. She's not fun to play with anymore. We're just going to push her to the side. Let's bring in Khadgar. Okay. He's cool.
Let's piss her off and then just leave her there.
Because honestly speaking, the role that Khadgar is filling here, the one where he's like, the Horde and the Alliance need to unite to fight against the Burning Legion. That was Jaina's role. That should have been Jaina's role all along. I mean, that's the role that she was born to play. That's the one that she's been trying to play all this time. And Khadgar just sort of swoops in and not only takes that from her, he takes her place in the Council of Six, along with, you know, her boyfriend, who don't even... get me started on that one. Jaina leaves and Caligos shows up and says, okay, well, I guess I'll sit on the council. It's like, oh, thanks, Caligos. Way to stand behind your woman, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. The whole thing is stupid. And the way that they've handled her is just, it's horrible. It's horrible what they've done to her. Not because of what they've done, but because they haven't finished that story. They got to a point where they were uncomfortable with what they were doing, and maybe they just didn't know where to take her from there. And instead of actually trying to find some sort of resolution to it, they shoveled her to the side and they brought in somebody else. Somebody pleasant and older and more dad.
Khadgar.
Nice.
Now, don't get me wrong. Awesome. I like Khadgar, and I like the character of Khadgar, and I like what they've done with Khadgar, although I think he's kind of a little overplayed at this point. But, you know, two expansions worth of focus is going to do that to anybody. Look at Thrall.
Yeah.
It's just that they had somebody there who could have filled that role, naturally filled that role, and instead of letting her fill that role, they decided to bring in this character from the RTS games and Burning Crusade and let him play instead. And I don't get it. I don't get it. So yeah, Jaina just consistently bothers me. A lot of that bothers me. And I'm so sorry. I'm going off on a rant here.
No, it's good. Do you think we're going to do so? And like they said in the interview, no more Jaina for now. Do you think that's true? Do you think she's gonna show up? Like,
I think it's true. I think that they've decided they just want to forget about her for now. They just want to forget about her. They don't want to think about her too hard, because trying to dig her back out of that hole that they shoved her into is too difficult for them to do. Or, you know, it's
that
just a subject they don't want to tackle, maybe. I don't know. Maybe she'll show up. I'm hoping that she does show up. And I'm hoping that she shows up with the entire remaining fleet of Kul Tiras at her back. Because I feel like...
I hope so. Man, we're all very interested in Jaina. Like, that's one of the biggest questions that gets asked all the time.
Yeah, I feel like if she left to go do anything, she's not the type that would leave to go sulk somewhere. She's the type that would leave and try and find her own solution. And I believe that the solution best suited to her, and the one that makes the most sense, legit makes the most sense, is her going back to Kul Tiras. Because I think that a lot of how she's acting right now is how Grand Admiral Daelin Proudmoore would have acted. And maybe that kicked in to her finally. You know, It makes it just makes sense because it's like, okay, maybe she wants to go back and find her roots again and go, okay, who am I? Who am I really? Is this who I am? The world is going to like be blown to smithereens and I can't find it in myself to be myself anymore. You know, make that journey back to Kul Tiras. Okay, that would be cool. That would be interesting. The other person, there's one more. There's one more I'm really irritated about right now.
All right. Who is this?
Okay. Rathian. Can we just talk about Rathian for a moment? Can we talk about the fact?
Can I just say that the fact that he had a beautiful little nugget in High Mountain in the beta that just completely got like pulled out like a wisdom tooth and chucked to the side, like, was so sad to me. His whole
thing. How about we go back and we talk about the fact that the very reason that we're in this expansion to begin with, this expansion, what is happening in this expansion is all of the stuff that Rathian saw and told us about back in Mists of Pandaria. It's the very thing that he was trying to get the Horde and Alliance to come to some kind of resolution so that there would be an army to fight this thing. If any character, if any single character should be involved in this expansion, like right now, it's him.
Mm-hmm.
He was the impetus for it.
Mm-hmm.
So where is he?
So I don't think that he foretold it as much as he orchestrated it, right?
No, he saw it. He saw it. What's the first thing that he tells you when you run into him at level 90 or what? You know, you go in and you talk to him and he goes, I had a vision when I left Ravenholt. He's like, I had a vision. And he shows you the vision. And the vision is, it's Azeroth. It's the globe of Azeroth. And all of a sudden it turns green and there's meteors raining from the sky. And he's like, the Legion is coming. And we have to do something about it. And his whole idea of how to make this happen was to pit the Alliance against the Horde, push it all into fast forward so that one side beats the other, and that way one side is subjugated, but they're all kind of fighting for the same side, right? So you've got this mass army that's capable of, they don't have to put aside their differences. They have been forced to put aside their differences. Mm-hmm. They have been forced to declare a winner in this war that never seems to end. And once a winner is declared, then everybody can just move the heck on and focus on the Legion threat. That's what Rathian was trying to do there. Was it heavy-handed? Yes, but he was two, so...
Fair enough.
He's two. Yeah, he's a two-year-old black dragon.
I get
what
it.
Can
my
do?
Son is three, and he may take some of the same approach.
Right, okay, so it's a little heavy-handed, but at the end of that, he gets really mad because a resolution is not reached, and he flies away, and he says that, you know, he gives that whole chestnut of, I'll be back, you haven't heard the last of me, blah, 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 flies away into the sky, little whelp. And then we don't see him again. He makes a very token cameo appearance once during the legendary questline in Warlords. He doesn't say anything to you. He's just flying overhead, and then we never see him again. This is a character who was introduced and developed throughout Mists of Pandaria, specifically for the purposes of leading up to the Legion expansion. The fact that he is not in the Legion expansion baffles me. It just baffles me. And he was there. He was there in beta. And then he wasn't. And they haven't said anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the justification that they gave was, oh, well, we couldn't get a storyline to where we wanted it to be. Bull! Come on! He's been doing this storyline since the Mists of Pandaria. Where are your writers? Mm-hmm. Come on, bring in Kosak. Let him take a look at it. Let him figure it out. Hammer that puppy out. Bring him back. I love Rathian. I really do.
And yeah, he's amazing.
It feels like a major disappointment that he's not here. And I've spent like the last like half hour or so complaining about stuff, and I feel really terrible about that. So let's talk about some other lore stuff instead.
Okay,
do you guys have questions or something?
Yeah, Illidan. So I'd like to know what happened to him. Like, because there's lots of the story that I just don't know. So I read War of the Ancients, so I know what happens there. I read Illidan before Legion came out, so I know what happens there and from his point of view in the Black Temple. But what I don't know is what happened in between those two points in time. You know, 10,000 years ago with the War of the Ancients to before the Illidan story, what happened to him? Like, where was he? How did he get out? All that stuff.
Wait, are you talking about how did he get out of where? What?
Well,
exactly.
He was imprisoned, wasn't he? Well, he was imprisoned, wasn't he?
Yes.
Okay, so...
Yes, after the War of the Ancients, he was imprisoned.
Okay, and then what? How did he get into the Black Temple?
Okay. Like, so you haven't played Warcraft 3, have you?
No.
Ooh,
I played some of it.
Warcraft 3.
Oh, okay. See, I played some of it, but I never finished it. And that was before I was World of Warcraft even came out. So, give me a quick fill-in then.
I was going to say, it's a pretty lengthy story, but basically what happened was the Burning Legion showed up on Kalimdor. Taranda saw this and said, uh-oh. Malfurion, meanwhile, was taking a nap in the Emerald Dream, as druids are wont to do. And Taranda went and woke him up, and then they were getting their allies together, and they were waking up the other druids in the Barrow Dens, and Taranda had this brilliant idea. Huh, she thought to herself. You know who was really effective at fighting the Burning Legion, like back when we did this 10,000 years ago? Illidan. Who was the person who was super concerned about the Legion coming back again? Illidan. What did we do with him? We locked him in a hole? You know what? I think I'm just going to go let him out. She didn't tell Malfurion. She just went and did it, right? Because she knew that he wouldn't want to do it.
Right.
Maiev and her watchers were not happy about the fact that Taranda was there to do this. Taranda, actually, during that campaign in Warcraft 3, she ended up killing a bunch of the watchers, specifically so she could let Illidan out. And she let him out. She said, hi, the Legion's here. We need your help. And then Malfurion shows up and goes, what have you done?
Oops.
And there's just a lot of awkward going on.
Okay.
They split their separate ways, and Illidan goes to Fellwood. And while he is in Fellwood, that's when he first runs into the Skull of Gul'dan, and he absorbs its powers, and he becomes that whole winged, demon-y-looking horned guy.
Right, okay.
That we know and love today. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, you know, when she busted him out of jail, he wasn't all demonified yet. It wasn't until he went to Fellwood, and in an effort to cleanse Fellwood, you know, he was actually cleansing the Legion from Fellwood, and he got tricked into consuming the powers in the Skull of Gul'dan. They said, you know, that's a really powerful thing. And he's like, really? He goes, yeah, you could totally, like, defeat more of the Legion if you just kind of hoovered that up there. And he went ahead and did it. Because power was power, as far as he was concerned.
Right. Okay.
And there's a lot of back and forth there. And eventually, because he consumed the powers of the Skull of Gul'dan, he was kind of bound to the Burning Legion in a way that he hadn't been before. So he was kind of reporting to the Burning Legion in a way that he hadn't before. And it kind of turned into this whole thing where he was a servant of the Legion. He'd been kind of tricked into becoming this servant of the Legion. He was not happy about this at all, but there wasn't really anything that he could do about it. So once the Legion was defeated at the end of the Third War there, Archimonde went boom and went bye-bye. Illidan was visited by Kil'jaeden, who said, you know, okay, Your track record here is sketchy because you said that you were working with us, but then you weren't working with us, but then you were because you ate that skull, but then you weren't, and we're not sure what to think about you. And Illidan's like, yeah, well, you know, I'm part of you now. Kil'jaeden said, I'm going to give you one last chance to, like, make things right here. There's this dude up on the Frozen Throne who's been a thorn in our sides, and we need him dead. So can you go do that for me? And Illidan said, yeah, sure, okay, I'll go do that. And he went to go try and do that. He disrupted what was going on with the Frozen Throne. The reason that the Forsaken are the Forsaken is because the attack that Illidan made on the Frozen Throne shook things up enough that Arthas kind of temporarily lost his hold on the Scourge.
Okay.
Yeah, which then kind of set some of those Forsaken free. And that's where the Forsaken kind of developed from. This was all Illidan's fault. And this is all stuff that he was doing. But yeah, you know, the main thing to look at there is that it pretty much, he was hunting down the Legion, but at the same time, once he consumed that skull, he kind of became the Legion. And that's sort of the impetus of demon hunters as they are today, where you have to consume the demon to actually, like, fully understand what they are and hunt them with any kind of effectiveness. I have a feeling it's all kind of based on that moment where he actually, like, took the power from the Skull of Gul'dan.
Okay.
And after that whole meetup, you know, his attack on the Frozen Throne and everything else, it wasn't successful, and he knew it wasn't successful. So what he ended up doing was he decided to go ahead and call in the Naga to help him out. The Naga then allied with the Blood Elves, and everybody ended up on Outland. Long story short, I'm not going to go into like the entirety of the story or
No, that's fine.
Long story short, after all of this, Illidan met up with Malfurion and Tyrande one more time. And he also met up with Maiev. Maiev was not happy about the fact that Illidan had been released. And she was basically on this manhunt to get him back. And she chased him all the way to Outland to try and get the guy back. Didn't manage to get him back. And he got all the way to the Black Temple and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and establish our citadel here. Half the reason that he went to Outland was because he knew he had failed the Burning Legion, and he figured maybe he could hide out and nobody would notice that he was there.
Right.
That was not the case. Because as soon as he established everything, Kil'jaeden showed up again and said, sup? Hey, remember that thing that I asked you to do? And Illidan's like, yeah, I remember that thing. Didn't happen. And Kil'jaeden's like, before I rip you to shreds, I'm giving you one last chance. I want you to travel to Northrend. I want you to go to the Frozen Throne. Arthas is on his way there, and you're going to make sure that he doesn't make it to the top. And Illidan said, okay, cool. I'll get right on that. And he left. He took Kael'thas with him. He took Vash with him. And they all traveled to Northrend. There was a lot of the backstory that went on in Northrend. All of this is Warcraft 3. And really, if you haven't played Warcraft 3, like the Frozen Throne, you need to play that. It's really good. They get up there. He confronts Arthas, and Arthas destroys him. They have a fight. He doesn't die, but he's on the brink. And Kil'jaeden, because it's a K name. Kael'thas and Vash see this, and they take him back to Outland to basically build back his health. And that's what that's the last that we hear of things. Now, if you've read the Illidan book, it picks up at that point. That point where he's come in. And that's kind of, it's just after what happened there, and it's that whole period where he's kind of recuperating, and he's coming up with the idea to make these demon hunters, and he's also dealing with Maiev and all of this other stuff that's going on. So it's all kind of interconnected there. But yeah, during that time period, there was a whole mess of stuff going on that you need to play Warcraft 3 seriously.
Apparently so. Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because I've always wondered.
That was probably the glossiest cover of that. I didn't even go into any of the details. There's a million different side stories and stuff in
there. Well, that fills in a lot already. It really does.
Yeah, Warcraft 3 was phenomenal. It was a phenomenal game with a phenomenal story, and definitely deserves playing if you haven't played it.
I am going to jump into some Twitter questions and Discord questions from here, because I know that we're coming up on time shortly. But
okay.
I have no idea how to say this name. I'm going to say Sandro. There's two questions here. I'll read them both, and then you can answer how you see fit. In 7.2 cinematic, why is Sargeras talking through a fire thingy? Was his physical body destroyed at some point? And part two of the question is, do you think demons realize that the final phase of destroying the universe is the Legion destroying itself?
Okay, first one, it's a communications device, and I have a feeling that nobody really knows what Sargeras actually looks like. He's just this big, or if they do, they've forgotten.
Yeah.
I know Kil'jaeden probably knows exactly what Sargeras looks like, because he was there when Sargeras showed up and said, hey, you all want to make a deal? I'll give you all the power in the universe if you follow me. And Kil'jaeden was like, yeah, sure, sounds like a plan, you know? I think that for the sake of doing communications and things like that, I mean, Sargeras is kind of the embodiment of Fel. He is the master of the Burning Legion. He's all came from. So why not be a flame?
And it could be something that they don't really want to reveal yet with us.
Oh, yeah.
Going to Argus, you know, they don't want to, you know, spoil the end of the X-Pack yet. We still have a little ways to go with the tomb first and then Argus after that.
So. I don't know if we're actually going to fight Sargeras on Argus. I really don't. I don't. I'm beginning to doubt that, because that would be a weird thing for us to do. But, second question, can you reread that second question for me?
Do you think the demons realize that the final phase of destroying the universe is the Legion destroying itself?
Absolutely not. And I think the 7.2 trailer, it was kind of becoming a little bit clear that Kil'jaeden was getting impatient, and he was getting upset, and he was getting annoyed, because he's like, you promised us all this stuff, and we aren't getting it. And then Sargeras takes a crack at him, and then Kil'jaeden points over his shoulder and says, I gave you my world. I gave up the world. And you see Argus, this shattered remains, what's left of Argus anyway, just sort of floating there in the atmosphere. And you get this definite sense that maybe Kil'jaeden is starting to get some kind of regret, but there's never the impression that he's like, oh yeah, no, we're going to make the universe completely die. No, the people that want the universe to be destroyed, or that want, you know, all of this chaos and death and destruction, and they're gleeful about it, and they will happily talk about it till the ends of the earth, that will be the Twilight's Hammer, and they're allied with the old gods. They're all cuckoo.
Right.
They're led by Cho'Gall. And we've heard how sane Cho'Gall is, you know, a couple of times over. I don't think they kill Jane and the rest. I think that they believe they were promised the universe. They were promised that they would conquer the universe. And then they just sort of assumed that, you know, after the universe is conquered, they'd rule over it. Because that's what you do when you conquer something. You rule over it from on high. I don't think that Sargeras has really told them, oh, yeah, and when all that's done, I'm going to destroy every last one of you. I'm just going to snuff you all out like a candle, and the universe will reset itself, maybe, if we're lucky. I don't think he's told them that part. I think that if they knew about that part, they'd be a lot less likely to follow him. For all they know, the reason they're in this whole burning crusade, the reason that they think it's an okay thing, is because they get to be better. They get to destroy things and be better. You know, they get to do the conquering. And if they knew what the end game was to that, all of that conquering, I don't think that they'd be on board with it at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't think they're I don't think they're interested in destroying themselves. It was more of a domination kind of thing.
The cinematic seemed to be a popular question topic. From our Discord, Draconis asked, in the 7.2 cinematic in the Circle of Heroes, it looks like Javi is there. Why would Odin be there, and is that significant in any way?
He is, well, basically they have like the different leaders from the different class halls there, different representatives from the different class halls, and Javi slash Odin, he represents the warrior hall. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, warrior heroes who are supposedly the leaders of that, except that they still have to ask Odin for approval on like everything. But there's also Odin, and it's like that with, I know, for example, with the Rogue Class Hall, you've got, you're supposedly the leader of the Uncrowned, but there's a whole bunch of other people that are sitting on that council with you, and they show up, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not really anything devious or anything.
Right. Okay.
Odin's not really after anything in particular. He's just a representative, because they're all there. If you look a little closer, you'll see everybody.
He seems to think pretty highly of himself, and is often, you know, standoffish, doing his own thing. So you don't
Odin see is also him,
like, hanging out with everybody in a council, you know.
Odin is also the Titan Forged who believed that creating the aspects was the dragon aspects was a terrible idea, because the Titan Forged could protect the world just fine all on their own. And that turned out real great for him, didn't it?
Salty says, also in the cinematic is Khadgar. When does he die? I know it's a bit of a troll question, but I mean, I don't know, man. He's
I think
this expansion was panning out to be the Red Wedding of Warcraft here, and I don't know if we're going to see some more here.
I think that with Khadgar, and I've said this before on the podcast, and I'll reiterate it again here, I don't think that we're necessarily going to fight Sargeras himself at the end of 7.3. Because that's a Titan. That's a former Titan. I don't think that that's something that we can just like defeat in a raid. You have to understand that these Titans, the reason that they don't hop down on planets or anything like that is because they're too big.
They can't.
They can't. They physically cannot do it. You have in Chronicle, the reason that the Well of Eternity exists is because Amon-Thul reached down and tried to rip Yashiraj from the surface of Azeroth. and he tore Yashiraj apart, but in the process ripped open this wound in the world. But you have to understand that Yashiraj, that big, giant, malignant, old god thing, Amon-Thul was able to just like rip, like pluck his, put his hand around the thing. Like, he may even have like pinched it between his fingers. We don't know.
So all gods are like zits on the planet.
kind of. But the more to the point, though, the Titans are gigantic. They're so they're so much larger than we can comprehend. And if you look at Chronicle Volume 2, I talked about this a little bit in last week's Know Your Lore, because I was talking about the evolution of Draenor. That was something that they brought up in Volume 2 of Chronicle. Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I talk about that book?
No, not at all.
I don't know
if you guys are cognizant of like spoilers or whatever. It's not really spoilers because it's all ancient history. Yeah. But yeah. Okay. So when you look at the evolution of Draenor, what happened there was Agrimmar showed up and saw this planet and said, "Is there a world soul?" Nope. Okay. Hey, wow. This planet's real weird. There's all these spore mound things that are kind of like sentient plants and they're taking over the whole planet. That's not good. Man, if they are allowed to do that, then they're just going to start devouring themselves and it'll just be this dust ball. That's kind of sad. Maybe I'll help that planet out. So he knew that he couldn't go onto Draenor himself because he'd do irrevocable harm to the planet. So what he did was he created his own version of the Titan Forge. He created Grond. And Grond was this giant behemoth. He was the first of the Breakers. He was the mightiest of the Breakers. And he went after the spore mounds. As he and the spore mounds fought back and forth, little chips and pieces of him kept falling off. And these chips and pieces of him turned into the Magnaron. Now, we've seen Magnaron in Warlords. They're not small. But if you think of the Magnaron as being just a chip off of this massive creature, then you get kind of an impression of just how big Grond was. And if you look at, oh, I don't know, the Zangar Sea. The Zangar Sea is made out of the corpse of a spore mound. It was that massive. And yet, all of these things are tiny in comparison to a Titan.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of blows your mind when you think about it, right? When you think about exactly how big these Titans have to be. And yeah, I don't remember where I was going with that.
Talked about how the Titans can't really come to the planet. And
yeah, the Titans.
So we won't be like probably not literally fighting.
I don't think that we could fight Sargeras. I really don't think that we could fight Sargeras. Oh, we were talking about Khadgar. Okay. So reeling it all back in. Sorry, I'm rambling here again. Reeling it all back in. When you look at that, and you look at how cosmically gigantic these Titans have to be, even Sargeras the Dark Titan has to be, I don't think that we're going to physically, I mean, what would we do? We're like the size of dust mites to this thing.
Yeah, there's no physical or magic, or, you know, there's no sort of manifestation that we can,
what, can
know,
we,
have an impact on anything.
We can, you know? wage a war of wars against one of his skin flakes. Like, This thing is massive. So I think what we're more likely to fight, if anything, is an avatar, another avatar of Sargeras, where he puts his essence into a creature and then we fight that creature. Sort of like what Aegwynn did back when she got possessed at the end of all of that, and then she had Medivh, and then Medivh had his problems. Okay, where all of this started. And I think that's the best we can hope for. In that line of thinking, I had people ask me, you know, if Sargeras was going to possess a new avatar, who do you think he'd possess? And a lot of people were saying Valen. I don't think that he'd go into Valen. I think if he went into anybody, he'd go into Khadgar. And that's how Khadgar would meet his end. Just like Medivh did. It'd be like round two. It'd be the circle completing itself again. Not a good circle. It's a bad circle. It's a bad circle if you happen to be a guardian. And I kind of hope that we don't go that direction, because I do like Khadgar. He's grown on me quite a bit since he was first introduced. I love his voice actor. I think he's a great character and everything. Dadgar is cool by me, even though, you know, Jaina was kind of shoveled to the side at, you know, she was like the expense of that. Mm-hmm. But I do like Khadgar. However, I think that logically speaking, if he's going to die, that would be the point where it would happen. Or, you know, he'll pull a Tyrion and just, like, throw himself in a battle or whatever. But I don't see him doing that. He's too clever to do that. I think if he meets his end, it's going to be some kind of magical means that he can't do anything about.
I know he doesn't mind doing some frontline stuff. You know, you see him in the Gul'dan fight and all that. But
well, he was right there at the Dark Portal too. So you know, but
yeah, he's in it. But yeah, he seems to be very cognizant of having an exit plan. So
we got one last question here from our Discord, and it's somewhat related to my Illidan questions in. But whatever happened to Maiev going essentially crazy with bloodthirst and xenophobia, as portrayed in Wolfheart, and essentially exiling herself from Darnassus and Night Elf society as a whole? This is Max saying this, and he says when he finished reading that book, he thought it was one of the coolest plot threads they ever planted, and was quite disappointed to find in Legion no one seems to have any problem with her or the Wardens.
Maiev is another one of those sticking points. I know we already talked about Jaina a lot, and then we talked about Rathian. Maiev is another one of these points that kind of like sticks in my head, because they did. They wrote her into a place where, if you haven't read Wolfheart, you should.
I should do a lot of things, Wolfheart,
apparently.
Huh? I should do a lot of things now, apparently.
Yeah.
Play Warcraft 3.
Wolfheart's really good. It's really good. And if you can get your hands on the audiobook version of Wolfheart, it's also very good.
Okay.
The guy that reads it is just like excellent at what he's doing, and it has like little sound effects and things in there too. It's pretty cool. The thing about Maiev and Wolfheart is that at the end of Wolfheart, it's revealed that she was the one that was trying. Oh gosh, this is a spoiler, but this book has been out forever. Okay, so it's like a murder mystery book, and in the end, it's like a murder mystery type of book, and in the end of it, it turns out that Maiev was the person who was doing it all along, and she has her reasons. The reason that I'm kind of upset about Maiev is because all of those reasons were very legit reasons for what she did. Malfurion and Tyrande had kind of just made the decision to allow the Highborn, to allow the Shenralar back into Night Elf society, and to allow Night Elves to begin practicing magic again, being mages. And this was the thing that they exiled the Blood Elves for way back when, before they were Blood Elves, when they were just Kaldare, before they'd even become High Elves at that point. Mm-hmm. They said, no magic whatsoever. No, it's bad. And if you do it, we're going to kill you. And then they did it. And they said, okay, well, we're not going to kill you, but you can get off our continent. So they had this long established thing where magic was terrible. And the reason that Illidan was imprisoned in the first place, part of it was because he tried to kill Jared Shadowsong, Maiev's brother. Part of it was also because he tried to make another Well of Eternity right after they finished this whole war surrounding the first Well of Eternity. And Illidan's argument was, when the Legion comes back, we're going to want access to this magic again. We need to have another Well of Eternity. We have to have it. And everybody was like, no, no, we don't want anything to do with that thing. We're going to lock you in a hole for 10,000 years. So Malfurion changing his mind on this one thing was a signifier that the thing that Maiev had spent 10,000 years doing, the job she had to guard the guy who was imprisoned for 10,000 years, was no longer valid. Oh, never mind. I guess he wasn't that dangerous after all. Oh, never mind. I guess these guys aren't that dangerous after all. Oh, never mind. Mm-hmm. That 10,000 years of servitude that you've poured into the Kaldare. Yeah, we don't care. And it was just enough to push her over the edge. Because the thing about Maiev and her reasoning, her way of thinking, is very similar to how Fandral Staghelm used to think. It was a very traditional point of view where Night Elves and the Kaldare were typically very isolationist. They came out at night. They were kind of nocturnal. They didn't really interact with any of the other races on Kalimdor until the Third War. And that whole inclusion into the Alliance and everything was kind of setting everything that the Kaldare had ever been on its side, you know, kind of shoveling it to the side and going, okay, we're going to be something new now. Well, I guess since we're being something new, we're going to do all this other stuff too. And Maiev is looking at this situation and rightfully beginning to question it. Fandral looked at this alliance and kind of like crossed his eyes at it, because if you look at it, if you take take a step back at and look at it just from a logical perspective, everything really terrible that's happened to the Calderai in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years has been a direct result of them being a part of this alliance.
Yeah.
Like, what has it done for them, really? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they would have been better off just being cloistered away. Maybe it would have been better had they just simply, you know, withdrawn after the Third War and said, oh, an alliance, that's nice, no thank you, and gone back to the old ways and just kind of ignored the fact that that Third War thing ever happened. But instead they decided they wanted to be an active part of the rest of the world. And what was it getting them? It was getting them a lot of dead night elves. That's what it was getting them. And a lot more war and a lot more conflict and a lot more being drawn into things that hadn't ever really affected them before to that day. So they're losing people. They're losing people left and right. They lost their immortality at the end of the Third War. They aren't going to live forever anymore. And yet they all seem to be perfectly willing to just fling themselves out in the middle of combat and die, you know? And on top of that, they seem to be perfectly willing to embrace these things that they had spent thousands and thousands and thousands of years turning away from. So it set Maiev on edge, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
And it made her a little angry. But it was a justifiable kind of anger. And the fact that she would go after Malfurion Stormrage, she didn't go after him directly right off the bat. The first thing that she tried to do was she tried to frame the Worgen for the deaths of the Highborn. Because she figured, okay, that way the Highborn will be dead, and that's good. And the Worgen will be blamed for it, and that'll be even better because they'll kick them out of Darnassus because the dogs don't belong here.
Yeah.
This is just another thing that we've picked up that we don't need to be picking up. And it's like a mark of our shame. We shouldn't be allying with these things. We shouldn't be doing anything with these things. They should be off doing their own stuff. So she had a logical reason for doing what she was doing. Did it make it right? No. Not even a little. Like, the stuff that she was doing was really terrible. At the same time, her reasons were totally justified. At the end of this, they managed to uncover that it was Maiev all along. And when Malfurion goes to confront her, that's when she goes nuts. And she goes nuts and she tries to kill him. She just straight up tries to kill him. Because after all of this, after everything that she's poured into, after these 10,000 years of service to the Calderai, it looks like Malfurion just wants to kind of toss that aside, which makes him every bit as reprehensible as his brother had ever been. And of course, Illidan's not there anymore. Illidan's dead. Illidan's locked away. Illidan's been imprisoned. He's been taken care of. So the Huntress has nothing to hunt. Well, now she does. She has Illidan's twin brother. So yeah, none of that is actually addressed. None of that is actually addressed in Legion. None of that has been addressed since. And it kind of makes me sad because all of that made so much sense, right? And it was this really fascinating plot point that was just like, holy cow, okay, Maiev could be that whole interfaction. She could be the Garrosh to the Calderai, and I'd be cool with that. I'd be cool with that. I would have been cool with it. I would have been happy if Fendral had filled that role, but they got rid of him, right? I believe the only reference that they made to it was kind of a passing aside between Jared and Maiev, where Maiev was like, I don't even remember what she said. It was something like, do you think they'll understand or whatever? And he's like, oh no, it's okay. They'll get it. And I'm not quoting exactly here because I can't remember the exact words, but they kind of glossed over it. They glossed over all of it and just sort of shoved it to the side. And they aren't dealing with that right now. Malfurion probably doesn't even know, you know, what extent Maiev is involved in all of this, because he's been busy with this whole Emerald Nightmare thing, so it's not like he's paying much attention. Will we see some kind of confrontation? I hope so. I hope that that moment is acknowledged, and I hope that it isn't just shoveled into, oh, well, it was the old gods. They were driving you a little crazy. Ha ha, womp womp. No. I want to hear these issues like straight up addressed, because I think that this is a really good opportunity. it's like a golden opportunity almost for the Night Elves to kind of establish why they wanted to be part of the Alliance in the first place and why they want to continue being a part of that Alliance. We've never really gotten that question answered before. I think it needs to be answered. Why not? And maybe Malfurion can kind of establish himself as a little more of a leader in the process. Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
I feel like there's a lot of unfinished threads that people are kind of chomping at the bit for, so I don't know. Let's see, I guess.
The problem is that there's all these like little plot threads here and there that haven't been picked up, where they've been dropped and put to the side and they haven't been picked back up again. You could only pick up so many during an expansion, because if you pick up too many, then none of them get enough attention. So you have to like pick and choose the best moments. And yeah, I feel like they maybe picked and chose a few moments when they should have been looking at some other ones instead with this expansion, but that's okay.
I love this expansion.
I really do. Don't get me wrong.
I could pick and choose things that frustrate the heck out of me, but for the most part, I think it's super fun. Really, it's compelling, and like you said at the top of the show, there's plenty to do, and there's I've said this on previous episodes, but I have actually gone through and finished the class campaigns and everything on every single class. I've finished all that stuff.
Oh boy, you're ahead of me there, man.
I got the legendary campaign achievement and all that stuff. It is
dang.
Yeah.
Good job.
I will go on. Man. I will go on record saying that I believe my two favorites are probably the Death Knight and the Shaman ones.
I have not finished the Shaman one yet. I have my Shaman alt. I just haven't finished it yet. I have finished Hunter. I finished Druid. Druid was great. I liked Druid a lot. And then I've also finished Rogue. Rogue had me very confused, and I still don't quite get
each
it.
Each one had their moments, but
they're kind of up and down.
But I'm not going to lie, man, that Death Knight one, I was actually like hyped about it while I was doing it. That one was so fun. It's really...
Obviously, I have something new that I need to go do. Yeah, that one I keep meaning to play through. And then the priest one, I've been told that the priest one is really good.
Paladin one really kind of like...
Yeah, that's cool.
...complement each other. So those, like, yeah, if you're interested in those at all, those are two very good ones.
I have both a priest and a paladin at level 100. I just haven't finished... I haven't, like, gotten to the point where I'm leveling those alts yet. But this expansion has been the expansion of alts for me. I've never felt more encouraged to actually play an alt and see these stories and check all this stuff out. Leveling is starting to get to the tedium point, but that's because I'm on alt number, I think, 6 now. Mm-hmm. 5 or 6, something like that.
You just started.
yeah. But like there are certain zones like High Mountain and Stormheim. For some reason, those two zones in particular don't really care for them right now. I think that once we get flying in 7.2 here, that will change the face of leveling, and I'll be able to level the rest of my alts with no issues. I do think that I completely forgot what I was saying. It's late.
we're gonna wrap it up here, but
okay.
like you were saying, this has been the expansion of alts. I feel like I'm playing less alts than ever, but I'm putting more effort into, instead of having 30 max level characters, I've got 12, and that's what I'm doing, you know.
Dang. Okay, see, I remember what I was gonna say. Mists of Pandaria, when that expansion was over, like, and I consider it over when I finished the Siege of Orgrimmar, right? When I finished that raid for the first time, that was the end of that expansion for me. I don't think about that whole year in between the end of Mists of Pandaria and the beginning of Warlords. I'm just looking at Mists of Pandaria from beginning to end, all of the content that we got, and that was my favorite expansion. That was my favorite expansion to date. It just knocked everything else so far out of the water. Between the patches that we got, the content that we got, and the story that we got, it was phenomenal. Yeah. It really was. They did a lot of really drastic things in that expansion, and it worked. It worked really well. However, I think Legion has kind of nudged it. They're tied at the moment.
Uh-huh.
They are tied, and the reason that they're tied is Suramar. It's all Suramar. Well,
okay, nice. I keep making this prediction, and I really hope that 7.2 is basically the newer, fresher version of what Isle of Thunder was in Pandaria,
Because it sounds like that's what it's shaping up to be.
I really liked that. I liked the unlocking it and the progression of it and the, you know, like the just the way that it rolled out and, you know, the kind of the new factions and the rep and the stuff. And then the raid came in, mm-hmm. you know. Really, really kind of hope.
And the new dungeon. I love the fact that there's a new dungeon. I can't wait to do that.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah.
I mean, Cathedral of Eternal Night, that just sounds cool.
It sounds gothic.
I know, right? But it's all the Tomb of Sargeras. That's the part that's the coolest.
Yeah, it's the upstairs, right?
Of
the
we're digging around in the Tomb of Sargeras. This is crazy. This is going to be nuts.
So good.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited about all of it. And
well, did you have any? I know we promised you an hour, and we're well over that now. Did you have any other?
No, honey, you're fine. I'm the one that's been talking and talking and talking. So
I know I am. I hate like. Stopping you, but like okay. I know we agreed on our
time. It's okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
Did you have any other like maybe Legion points or anything that's just really stuck out with you that you like that you hope that they push forward? Or
I'm really thoroughly interested in seeing what comes after with the old gods. Because they keep dropping hints all
the
over
end of
the place.
Emerald Nightmare and-
yeah, the end of Emerald Nightmare in particular. I love the fact that we got even just like the smallest glimpse of the Emerald Dream. I was just thrilled that we got to see at least a little part of it. And it had all those throwbacks to the old Emerald Dream files that people found when they were exploring back in Manila. Mm-hmm. Like the statues and things. Those are art assets from back then.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, the trees are art assets from back then. If you go, you can find them on YouTube still. They're just exploration videos. If you look up WoW Exploration Emerald Dream, mm-hmm. I think it'll bring up the old vanilla ones. And you could see a lot of the scenery and stuff that they used in these files that people found is stuff that they reused in that whole Emerald Dream scenario.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
That Remnant of the Void that's sitting in there and the Ysera's ghost walking mm-hmm. up to it.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's just creepy on another level.
You know in Shalaran, the when you actually go into the cave and there's so if you instead of going downstairs or going over to the portals, if you go to the far back of it, it drops down and like the cave goes back down even further into this room. And there's I don't know, man. There's something weird going on back there. It looks like there's another one of those like old god plant things growing. And
really,
I try to talk to people, and there's nothing going on back there. But I
thought that was like a little hideaway for the druids that you saved up at the on the western end of Suramar.
It seems like there's some weird stuff going on that just like I don't
know. Okay, I need to go give this another look as soon as we're done here because now I'm all curious. Okay. I'm like, the plant
the
is there? There's another
side.
Plant down there?
Yeah, it's like the opposite side of the entrance. Like if you keep going and then you walk all the way to the back. I think I ran into it one time because I was trying to leave and I went the wrong way. And
right, you go downstairs
and
as far as I knew,
it's not downstairs. It's still.
Oh, it's not.
It's on that middle level, but you go out the back, and there's like, and then it drops down, and there's a whole nother cave you go down into. It's like this room, and there's like some people chilling down there, and there's like this weird little flower, and you're like, okay, what the heck?
I'm gonna have to go look at this because the one place that I saw it was like there were night elves down there, and it was part of the whole. The druid group that you had saved, you know, where you go rescue the cat, the owl cats and things like that. They were from that area.
It's not down the spiral stairs. It's like if
oh just, yeah, no, not down the spiral stairs. It's in the back. You duck down. That's where those dudes were at. I'm going to have to take another look. Cause I thought that they were just the druids from the western end of the zone. Like they'd come in and they decided to go ahead and help out the Nightfallen since you were gung ho about that and you helped them.
It's like, there was a couple of NPCs down there that I tried to talk to, and then over in the corner there was another one of those weird, like the flower, like that you see at the end of Animal Nightmare. But like I haven't been back recently, obviously. But yeah,
all I know is that there are a vast number of hints that we will be contending with the old gods sooner rather than later. And if that's what we end up doing after Legion, I'm going to be really excited.
I'm down with it, right?
I figured that they'd make Argus like the next expansion. Like we'd go to Argus and that would be the next expansion. But since they've already said, oh yeah, 7.3, we're going to Argus. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, so next expansion, are we going to be dealing with the old gods? Like, do we actually get to, you know, face to face with Azshara finally?
I would rather do that than like a Lich King 2.0, you know?
Oh,
like,
I don't want to do a Lich King 2.0.
I don't either, but when you're looking at the life cycle of kind of the way that we're revisiting content, you know, Kata was a bit of a way of revisiting the vanilla, and then the Mist was something new, and then Warlords was kind of leading into a Burning Crusade kind of thing, and Legion seems to be the Burning Crusade throwback, and you know, I don't know.
I don't know what they're going to do after this. It feels like they are leaning towards an old gods expansion. I mean, if you've played a priest, you've done the Shadow Priest stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
And you've heard the chit chat from the Blade. Yeah, the chit chat from the Blade seems to be very indicative that we're going to be like doing stuff.
I think it's in Halls of Valor after you finish that, and your Blade's like, hey, go talk to Odin. Like your Blade basically trolls you. It's like talking trash.
Apparently, there's like an achievement for that.
I think Odin kills.
It's like
you
a hidden,
or something. Like,
yeah. There's a hidden achievement for getting Odin to kill you, and then there's like a couple other people that can potentially kill you if you listen to your weapon.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Your weapon is just
seriously awesome,
trolling you the whole time. It is hilarious.
It's great. And the thing is like a lot of people are all, oh, well, you know, it's an old god weapon. You shouldn't listen to it. It's lying. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's the case. Because the thing with old gods, they don't want to lie to you. They want to, like, just kind of utterly terrify you. And in some cases, what is more terrifying than the truth?
Exactly.
You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Why would it lie to you when they could just tell you the most jacked up, freaky thing that's actually true?
So that's one of those things that I'm looking forward to. I am looking forward to going to Argus in 7.3, and I'm looking forward to hopefully running into Tyralion and Illaria again because we've never actually met them face to face before. And it would be fantastic if we could. It'd be great. I'd be really excited.
Wasn't that confirmed that we were going to, at some point in this expansion, we were going to meet them? Or?
Yeah, we kind of have to at this point. Well, at least Tyralion, because he sent us the whole beacon thing. So, and he had that message in there. And
right.
I may have made some really inhuman noises when I first saw that cinematic. Okay. When first popped up, and at the end of it, he's like, Tyralion. And as soon as Khadgar said his name, I was just like, it was like, it was bad. There was just like squeaks. We haven't run into him yet, but we know where the Army of Light is. They're over at Argus. Where are we going? We're going to Argus. Mm-hmm. Stands to reason. We're going to see the old man, if he's old now. He should be old by now. Older, anyway. And if he's there, maybe his wife is there too. That would be great. I just hope that they don't pull a Ural and just leave them there, because that would make me sad. No, bring them back to Azeroth. Let's bring them home.
Hey,
it's been long enough. Let's bring them home, you know?
I know. Ural, like, was one of my favorite things about Warlords.
I'm so mad about her.
Let me know if you guys need anything. we need you right now.
If you ever need us, we'll be right here. And then it's like, oh, the Legion is attacking our world now. Hey, why don't we call those allies we just helped out of a jam? Nah, we'll just handle this ourselves. Oh, Warlords. No.
Okay.
That's awesome.
That's got to be a sound clip.
I love Legion. I love Legion, though. I really do. I love every bit of it. I don't think I've run into anything in it that's... I mean, I know I spent probably more time than absolutely necessary picking over these little nitpicky points, but they're just nitpicky points. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't really take from that I hate what's going on or anything, because I don't. I love what they're doing right now. I just feel like it could have been enhanced, maybe, but I'm not unhappy with it. It's just, I miss Rathian because I love Rathian. And I know that Aaron Phillips, the guy who does the voice work for Rathian, he did some other voice work for Legion. Mm. There's a couple of characters in Suramar that he did the voice work for. And you'll recognize it if you hear it, probably. I don't know. But Rathian's not here. And part of the reason I loved Rathian so much was he was just such a snarky little twit.
Nice.
I just want to see him come back with an "I told you so." Like, why not?
Yeah.
This is his moment. It should be his moment. Maybe. Where is he?
I know. Everything that we're doing right now, like you said, is like basically, you know, the whole vision, all the preparation, like everything that happened through an entire
expansion.
Yeah.
Of anyone, he should be there. He was the one who brought this all up to begin with. He should be there. So, yeah, I don't
know. Rathian's not but here, man.
I still love Legion. I love every ounce of it. And, you know, I look at it side by side with Mists of Pandaria, and they're kind of on the same point right now. And depending on how things pan out in 7.2 and 7.3, it may overtake Mists of Pandaria as, like, my favorite. And I didn't think that they'd be able to do that. Mm-hmm. After Warlords. I didn't know if they were capable of doing that after Warlords, but they have. They came back like in spades and delivered. So yeah, I love it. I love all of it.
Awesome.
All right, well, we should probably try and wrap this up, I guess, because we can just keep asking questions and I'm sure you could just keep talking on. But we need to be responsible adults and I guess.
Please. I have more Mass Effect Andromeda to play before I go to bed because I'm like in the middle of this campaign. Don't even talk to me about Andromeda.
What's more responsible than making sure you get some Andromeda in before bedtime?
There you go.
Look, I'm trying to kiss aliens here, so I'm just working real hard at that. I love Mass Effect.
Anyway. Nice. All right. If you haven't already, make sure you come and join the official Training Dummies Discord server at discord.me/TTD. It's the best way to keep in touch and get real-time interaction with us and our community, as well as the awesome guests you've heard on the show. That's discord.me/TTD.
It seems fate has brought us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
All right, well, Rob, what do you have for shout-outs this week?
Blingtron for giving you a legendary and ushering you into the upper echelon of elite legendary status now. So that video where Ian Hazikostas was talking about how you know, it's going to be important for you as a top-performing raider to decide which legendaries you're going to want to equip for which fight.
And that was
thank
me
you,
today.
Blingtron. Definitely, Anne, for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate you carving out some time for us. It's really awesome.
I really need to not wait so long between visits.
I agree.
I'm so sorry. It's just been real busy, y'all.
Yeah, it's totally cool. We're just grateful that you like us enough to come back. So,
of course,
Daryl, what do you got?
Well, the whole raid team, last week we went through and we managed to get through all of normal Nighthold in 2.5 hours, which sets up our new focus on heroic, which we're going to be doing this week and continuing forward. So that was nice to go through there and just kind of smash everything. It shows that we've grown as a raid team and we know the fight. So we're ready to take the next step to heroic. And then, yeah, of course, Anne for coming to talk to us again and... It's always a pleasure, and one of the episodes I look forward to the most is when, okay, Rob tells me he's got you booked. It's like, sweet. Can't wait.
It's so. Like, finally.
I didn't say that.
We tried to say it the nice way, though.
But no, I really look forward to it every time talking to you. It's definitely a pleasure. And do you have any shout-outs?
I think the biggest shout outs that I have right now are for Chris Metzen, Matt Burns, and Robert Brooks, because if you haven't read Chronicle Volume 2, I'm obsessed with this one. I absolutely love it. It came out a week ago, a couple weeks ago, and it's the second volume of Chronicle. It's like the encyclopedia, right? It's just the encyclopedia of lore, and it's everything that my little lore loving heart absolutely desires, and I love every little piece of it. So I kind of have to thank those three for writing it and actually putting it together and getting volume two out the door. And I really hope that they're all on volume three, because we have the third war to cover, and that's going to be a doozy.
Do they cover the second war in volume two?
Yep, they cover it's the evolution of Draenor and the first and second war, and that's about all they could cram in. The third war, I think we were discussing this, and we figured that the third war is probably going to take up a volume all by itself because there's so much to it. Yeah.
Well, I've got it. I'm reading it. I think the last I saw was year three after the Dark Portal. So it's in the first war still, so I didn't quite get to the second war, so I wasn't sure if that was covered too, so I'm glad it is.
Yeah, I really appreciate everything that they've done with it, and I really appreciate the way that they've taken all of these novels and all of these short stories and these games, the RTS games, everything else, and they've kind of ironed them into this cohesive whole that really works. It really does. And I know that, you know, there are some people that are talking about, oh, there's retcons and things like that. No, man. They're just ironing out the wrinkles, making a beautiful, beautiful lore sheet, a lore sheet that you can wrap yourself up in at night, and it'll be cozy. Mm-hmm. And I'm losing that metaphor. So shout out to those guys. Shout out to everybody that's still reading and enjoying Blizzard Watch. I appreciate every single last one of you, as always.
All right. Well, before we wrap this up, where can people reach you if they have more questions about this topic or anything else?
You can catch me at blizzardwatch.com, and Know Your Lore is probably the column I'm most well known for. That's the one where I blather on about lore endlessly. It's usually either World of Warcraft or Overwatch. I have done a whole series on Overwatch because that is a game that's chock full of story, and I could talk about that for like several hours too. Maybe next time you should bring me in. I'll school you. Anyway,
can we book that right now?
Yeah.
What are you doing next week?
What are you doing next
when
Monday?
Can we get you again? So, for the Know Your Lore columns, those air on every Friday. I also do the Blizzard Watch podcast, and that we do the live show on Tuesdays, and then it airs on the website on Thursdays. You can catch the posts on Thursdays. I do a live stream on Thursdays where we're leveling characters. We finally finished Return to Karazhan. It was very exciting, and I enjoyed every second of it. And I think we're going to be hitting Cathedral of Eternal Night this week. And then I think we're re-rolling and starting out from level one and going Horde. That should be fun.
Nice.
It'll be an experience. But yeah, that's Thursday afternoons, and then we put those up on YouTube and release those on Saturdays for people that want to listen. And then there's Lore Watch, the other podcast that I do, and Lore Watch is basically like this show. It's me.
It
and,
is. It's it's one of my favorite shows today. I think I love that probably more than the.
Everybody keeps going, oh, you should do that weekly. I don't have the time to do that weekly.
But it's just it's so good though.
But Lore Watch is recorded every other Sunday, so you can catch the podcast on it every other Sunday. Or if you want to support us on Patreon, that's patreon.com/BlizzardWatch, you get early access to the Blizzard Watch, you get early access to Lore Watch, and then you get the full uncut version of the Blizzard Watch podcast, which includes all of the pre-show where we talk about nothing.
We talk about Mass Effect.
No, I don't think we've actually. I think we talked about that a little bit, but not like a ton. And then you can catch me throughout the week doing various other columns and things for the website. I do an RP column on Saturdays too. I do a lot of stuff. And then if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Shades O' Grey. That's Shades the letter O and then G R E Y. I have nothing to do with 50 Shades of Grey. If that's what you're following me for, I'm sorry. You're going to be super disappointed. But that's about it, really.
Yeah, I can wish, huh? All right, that wraps up episode 161 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show over on iTunes, Stitcher, and thetrainingdummies.com. And remember, we are all just jackasses with mics. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust.
Woo!
From people you shouldn't.
Woo!